The question everyone wants answered is how a cold-blooded murderer ever got out in the first place. That question was posed by a newspaper in 1987 in the wake of a horrible crime in Baltimore. Just 1 year later, the entire nation was asking the same question because of this 30-second television ad.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
The Willie Horton weekend passes ad changed the 1988 presidential race. Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis had a strong lead over Vice President George H.W. Bush before the ad aired. But of course, Dukakis lost the race. And politicians say the ad shaped how they talked about crime for a generation, to the point where Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois says the ghost of Willie Horton has loomed over any conversation about sentencing reform for almost 30 years. But now the nation is gearing up for another presidential election, and the way candidates talk about crime has, in fact, changed. So has the Horton ghost been purged from American politics? Beth Schwartz-Apfel asks that question in her piece, Willie Horton Revisited. It's featured by the Marshall Project, a nonpartisan news organization focusing on criminal justice. Beth, welcome. And let's first start with just how important the Willie Horton ad was in that 88 race. I mean, Lee Atwater, who was George H.W. Bush's strategist, he famously said that they were going to talk about Horton so much voters would think he was Dukakis's running mate. And Atwater also said that it was an important gut issue at the time. So what did he mean by that?
Lee Atwater claimed that Willie Horton's race didn't matter at all. And in fact, in our story, there's a clip of him saying, I don't think most people in the South even know what race Willie Horton is, which seems to be pretty patently false.
Well, the ad had his picture in it.
Of course it did. Yeah. And in fact, there was also a picture of this white guard sort of leading him by the arm. And Horton's tall. He's taller than 6 feet. And he's sort of towering over this white guy and sort of looking down at him. But I think if you had asked Atwater, he would have said, well, any murderer is going to be scary. He just happens to be black. But when he uses terms like gut issues and values issues, he sort of reveals what's going on underneath.
And so how did that then dovetail with voters' attitudes about crime and criminal justice itself in the mid to late 80s?
It's hard to remember now because crime rates are so low. They're at historic lows, and they have been now for years. But the 80s were a very violent time, and people were scared. And I think there was a certain level of panic going on in the electorate, and people were just looking for politicians who promised to crack down on criminals.
It's so interesting to think back to that time because we're going to talk more in a minute about how attitudes have changed. But even at that time, I mean, the Bush campaign knew that they had a very explosive issue on their hands. I mean, insofar as it was talking about race, I'm talking about crime and race, as we touched upon. And in fact, you know, the media sort of amplified all of this. Mm-hmm. The ad itself only ran for like a month,
mm-hmm.
right?
In a very limited media market, too.
Yeah. So we've got some tape here more of how Lee Atwater dealt with questions from the media about whether or not the ad was racist and whether or not the ad actually came from the Bush campaign, because while they were talking about it, they were also trying to distance themselves from it. So here's Lee Atwater being questioned by Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes.
You think the Willie Horton commercial, though, gives hints of racial politics?
I haven't seen the Willie Horton commercial.
You don't have a Willie Horton commercial on the air?
No.
A furlough program commercial? Mm-mm. You don't have a crime? You don't have an ad on the air about the
No.
crime issue?
Mm-mm.
Yet on the other hand, you also report that the Bush campaign had Horton's mugshot hanging up at their campaign headquarters.
It does strain credulity that the Bush campaign knew nothing about this ad. You know, I think you see a lot of this kind of political gymnastics even now with PACs being seemingly independent when, you know, really mm-hmm. there's obviously links between the PAC and the campaign.
What really is interesting about this is that you also spoke with Governor Dukakis. And he told you, essentially, he doesn't actually blame Horton himself.
I mean, I blame myself. I mean, there was no reason under the sun why I shouldn't have been able to deal effectively with this. It turned out it was one of the dumbest decisions I ever made. I made a decision early in the campaign that I was not going to respond to the Bush attack campaign.
I mean, what could he have done, though, at the time? There seemed to be like this juggernaut of emotional power behind what the Bush campaign was doing.
Well, what he told us was he could have produced a very similar ad because, you know, the federal program and the program in California under then-Governor Reagan both had very similar stories of people who were furloughed and then went on to commit another crime. He knew about several that had happened under Bush's watch when he was vice president in the federal system.
But now we're getting, you know, back into what is a very important legal backdrop here and, you know, questions about how this ad not only changed presidential politics, but the criminal justice system. In 1987, 10% of state and federal prisoners actually received furlough. But after Willie Horton, after the ad, what happened around the country regarding the furlough program?
Furloughs are almost unheard of now. Occasionally, states will run a very small furlough program, but they'll do it very under the radar. You know, they don't want any press for obvious reasons, because as soon as the public hears about it, they freak out and the program gets shut down.
How much of it was because of what happened to Michael Dukakis in that campaign?
It's really hard to say. I think that there's a little bit of a chicken and egg question. You know, the public was already sort of panicking about crime during this period. So I think simultaneously the ad tapped into a pre-existing amount of anxiety around crime. At the same time, it sort of mobilized that anxiety, gave it a name, you know, set it in motion. So it's hard to say how much is attributable to the ad and how much the ad just really very accurately captured the public sentiment at that time.
So this all, again, it's chicken and egg. I take your point. And here we are almost three decades later. And there are many people saying, and I think legitimately so, that the way politicians talk today about the criminal justice system has changed quite dramatically. So first, here's President Obama in the State of the Union address talking about mass incarceration.
Surely we can agree that it's a good thing that for the first time in 40 years, the crime rate and the incarceration rate have come down together. And use that as a starting point for Democrats and Republicans, community leaders and law enforcement to reform America's criminal justice system so that it protects and serves all of us.
All right, so that was President Obama in January of this year. Here's Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul, who is running for president, speaking about another aspect of the criminal justice system, about fines and penalties, which can then lead many people to be forced to go to prison. He was speaking at Bowie State University in Maryland in March.
Those of us who have jobs and who have lived fairly privileged lives don't know what it's like to have to pay fines and then pay penalties on top of fines, and how someone's life can spiral out of control because of this.
And finally, here's Hillary Clinton, Democratic presidential candidate, speaking just last month.
If the United States brought our correctional expenditures back in line with where they were several decades ago, we'd save an estimated $28 billion a year, and I believe we would not be less safe. It's time to change our approach. It's time to end the era of mass incarceration.
So, Beth Schwartz-Apfel, I mean, it does seem as if the power of crime as an issue in presidential politics is quite different now than it was in 1988.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it used to be that crime was at the top of the list when, you know, these polling organizations would ask voters, what do you care most about in the election? It would always be in the top three. In the last election, you know, Gallup asked voters what they care most about, and they didn't even include crime on the list of things that they wanted voters to rank. So it's just lost its power as a political issue to a certain extent.
But, you know, when it comes to the potency of crime as an issue in elections, I mean, in your reporting, it seems as if it's still there, though, because you have several examples of how frightening criminals have been used in close races.
The interesting thing is actually in almost every election, you see somebody try it. But what has started to happen is actually it stops working. And sometimes it even backfires.
Well, I want to play one last piece of tape from Governor Dukakis himself, because I think he kind of disagrees with you.
I don't think there's any question about it. You get one of these horrendous cases, and all hell breaks loose.
I mean, that's Governor Dukakis saying that he doesn't actually think much has changed. A close race, maybe a battleground state, one really bad, awful case, and it could go back to 1988.
one can never predict the future. I mean, sure, you just don't know. But, you know, if recent history is any guide, you know, you just don't see these kind of ads getting the traction that they get, that they used to get. Even in Alaska, Mark Begich, who was the incumbent, ran this very inflammatory ad trying to tie his opponent to the release of this sex offender who then went on to commit another horrible crime. And in fact, the victims in that case wrote to Begich and said, take the ad down. You're offending us. And in fact, Begich lost the race. And people think that it was in large part because of the pushback he got from that ad. So it actually was backlash in that case.
Well, we'll see how this plays out in the presidential race as we head into 2016. Beth Schwartz-Apfel is a staff writer for The Marshall Project. It's a nonprofit news organization that covers the criminal justice system. Her piece, written along with Bill Keller, is called Revisiting Willie Horton. Beth, thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for this great reporting.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.